Good afternoon and welcome to this special session of the Supreme Court of Texas. With the six arguments the court will hear this week while in Houston, we will have completed our tour of all the cities in the state of Texas that have accredited law schools, and we'll have thus fulfilled the first round of our power to visit various locations in the state that the people granted us by constitutional amendment in 1997. Today at the University of Houston, this is Monday, and we're at South Texas College of Law, and we're very pleased to hear three cases, which we will hear in two oral arguments, the second two having been consolidated. In the first cause, we will hear the Honorable Lee P. Brown, Mayor, and the City of Houston versus Rob Todd and Steve Hotze, a case that originates out of Harris County. And we will then take a brief recess, and the second argument will be two causes, Gary Lawrence and his wife, Marty Lawrence, versus CDB Services Incorporated from Potter County, and Danny Lee Lambert and Teresa Lambert, individually and as next friends of Rusty and Rebecca Lambert, versus Affiliated Foods Incorporated from Randall County. In these two arguments, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present argument. The petitioner can reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of our court. These arguments are being videotaped and audiotaped. This gets a little complicated. You can purchase an audio tape of either or both arguments by making application with the clerk of our court in Austin, and there are a limited number of videotapes available for sale, hopefully not including my first slip, and you get those from South Texas. Justice Abbott is voluntarily recused in the first cause, but he will join us and hear the second argument after our recess. We are now ready to hear argument from petitioner in Brown versus Todd.
May it please the court. Ms. Judy Hatfield will present argument for the petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 8 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. Good afternoon. I, too, am nervous this afternoon. Thank this court for agreeing to hear arguments in this case. This is a very important precedent for this state, I think. The issues presented today. I had the first opportunity of observing arguments before this court when you visited UT about 10 days ago. So I'm aware that this court likes to go directly to questions. To comport with that, I hope the court will allow me to make a brief two-minute opening, and then I will do my best to answer your questions. This court should reverse the Court of Appeals decision as to Todd's claim of lawmaker standing for two reasons. First, Todd has presented no right controversy for judicial review. Instead, he seeks judicial resolution of a political issue before the normal political process, through the legislative process, has had the opportunity to resolve the conflict. Secondly, Todd's claim that the executive order deprived him of the loss of the right to vote on the subject matter of the order alleges only, quote, an abstract dilution of institutional legislative power, unquote, that does not give rise to an injury specific enough to confer standing.
You're taking the position now that this controversy is not yet ripe?
That's correct. As part of this, it's subsumed in the issue of standing.
Why is it not right?
It's not right because the council member Todd has not proposed an ordinance that would contravene the mayor's executive order. He alleges in his complaint that the mayor has usurped his council's authority to legislate on the subject matter. In truth, he's not even attempted to assert his legislative power to propose an ordinance on the subject matter, nor has City Council as a whole voted on that matter. Because
if what the mayor has done is illegal or not authorized by statute or the city charter, who would have standing to challenge that as a practical matter?
As a practical matter, any private litigant who is subject to the terms of the executive order, in this particular case, any employee of the City of Houston is subject to that executive order. So any employee other than an elected official. So any employee subject to discipline under the executive order or threatened with discipline under the executive order has the right to challenge the mayor's authority to have promulgated that order. This court will have full opportunity, or a lower court will have full opportunity, to reach the merits of this case when there is a right and justiciable controversy brought by a private litigant.
So you say only employees of the city would have standing?
Under the terms of the executive order, as Todd has asserted them, yes, I think an employee of the city of Houston would have that right, and only an employee.
The order is pretty broad. It covers all city activities, doesn't it?
That's true, it does.
If the Boy Scouts wanted to get a permit from the city to use a park and they were denied, would they have standing to challenge that?
They might at that point have standing, but that would be a legitimate controversy where they've done an affirmative action that is requested a city facility and been denied a city facility. In that case, there might be a specialized concrete controversy for this court to resolve. At this point, there has not been one.
It doesn't strike you as odd that a janitor could bring the suit, but not a member of the city council?
No, that doesn't strike me as odd, because a member of city council, council as a whole, could file this suit. If council as a whole had attempted to contravene the terms of the executive order or pass an ordinance that happens to affirm the executive order, until and unless council has done that, Todd, as a member of council, has only one vote on council. Under the Raines v. Byrd analysis...
You think if the council defeated an ordinance, then Todd could bring suit?
No, I don't believe so either.
So what's to keep the mayor and the council from conspiring to violate the organic documents of the city?
A person with right judicial, justiciable controversy, like an employee, or like in Justice Gonzalez's scenario, a Boy Scout group who had applied and was denied a permit for a city facility.
So this, no harm, no foul, no matter how egregious the governing officials may violate the organic documents of the city.
That's the constitutional limits of separation of powers on standing. The constitutional limits in both federal and, as you know well, in our state Supreme Court has said, that those are limited, that the injury must not be to either the voters as a whole, the people of the state as a whole, or legislators as a whole. It must be a specialized, concrete injury sufficient to confer standing. Unless and until that has occurred, this matter is not ripe in the sense that ripeness is part of the subject matter justiciability requirement.
Most of your cases, maybe all of them, are federal cases, where you're dealing with three co-equal branches and asking one branch to resolve a dispute between the other two. That's not quite the situation here with the city, which is with both branches of which are wholly a creation of the legislature.
That is true. That is a distinction. But what I am asking this court to do is apply the principles that are enunciated in Raines v. Byrd.
But why should we do that?
We should do this because your own opinion in Texas Association of Business requires a concrete and specialized injury. The bottom line here is there's not yet been a concrete and specialized injury.
Would Todd ever have a concrete injury if the dispute became right? Would it be possible for him as a councilman?
Not as a single council member. My position is that city council as a whole might have a concrete and specialized injury. If, for instance, city council passed an ordinance that in effect negates the executive order,
would Todd have been joined by a majority of councilmen or council members and challenged this with absent an ordinance? Would they have standing?
Not absent an ordinance, I believe.
Why is that?
Well, because there would not be a concrete controversy. You must, or the legislators must, attempt to exercise their adequate political remedies first. If in failing to do that, what they're asking this court to do is exercise judicial refereeship of a political issue before they've even attempted to fight the fight.
Why can't they simply seek a declaration that what the mayor has done is outside the bounds of the charter?
Simply because there's no concrete controversy, and city council can't do that until and unless it has asserted its own authority, which it has not yet done.
But Raines says that's okay, it's just not the law of the United States. It's okay to get in the middle of political controversies, and courts in other countries do. What's wrong with it? And courts in other states do. New York, for example. So why not here?
Because the Texas courts have always said that there is no concrete specialized injury if it's just a complaint that there has been a violation of the law. The cases on taxpayer standing and on voter standing in the state of Texas comport with this view.
When you say that the council must exercise their own authority first, is that based on what?
Well, based on Todd's allegations of his complaint, I certainly do not agree.
But when you say that they have to do that first, that they must, for example, try to act as a body first, why should we agree with you on that point? Why?
You should agree with me because until and unless they do, there is no concrete injury. There's no actual controversy for this court to resolve. If they had done so, if counsel had passed an ordinance that in effect contravenes the executive order, and if the mayor had continued to assert the validity of his executive order, and a majority of counsel brought this suit or authorized Todd to bring the suit, then we would have an actual controversy for this court to resolve.
What would happen if the city council say this activity is put as an agenda matter on the council's business, and the council, majority of the council, say we're not going to adopt that as an ordinance for the city. We reject that adoption as an ordinance of the city. And then the executive decides, well, legislatively we can't win on it, but I'll just impose an executive order. Now, is it your argument that the council, having rejected it once, must now come back and countermand the executive's decision in order to make it ripe for there to be a concrete injury? Or are you saying that before Todd can come here, he has to get a vote from the majority of the council authorizing Todd to represent the council? What is it? What is the concrete injury you're talking about that Todd has to suffer?
If council did indeed consider such an ordinance and did contravene the ordinance by refusing to enact what the mayor has done by executive order, for instance, if that had come before council and council had defeated it, they may indeed, at that point, have a specific injury sufficient to confer standing.
How have they been injured any more than they have been by not being allowed to vote on something that they think they're supposed to vote on?
I certainly don't concede that they would have an injury, but I could see that it's a closer question, more arguable that they might have
but
standing.
Why would you draw the line there if your line has been, you have to have somebody who actually has harm to their pocketbook, as it were, rather than just to their pride?
I hate arguing the other side's case, but I think at that point they would then argue that council has been harmed as a body.
How is that any less political or any more particularized than this?
It is more concrete.
But how?
Well, because they would then have exhausted their political remedies. The fact that
they could go beat the governor in the next race. And that's one of the possibilities.
Well, that's true. That's true. They could.
So then why is it more particular? If they still have that remedy left, why do you think they should get to sue in those circumstances?
Well, I don't concede that they do. But for sake of argument, it would be a closer question. But I do not concede that they would have standing.
And on the closer question, it wouldn't make any difference whether the ordinance had been rejected years ago or whether the ordinance was rejected the day before the executive imposed it by an executive order.
If you're going to the HOTSE question, yes. In my argument about HOTSE's standing is that that 85 referendum was fully completed and his votes were fully effective back in 1985, and that as a public policy matter, this court should not extend the Bloom decision to cover further than an election that was held 15 years earlier. If it does,
6 months later?
Well, 6 months later might be a closer question.
Why?
Again, the closer in time that you go to the vote, the closer the argument becomes that there is a concrete injury.
Where would you draw the line?
Well, I believe it would be up to you to draw that line.
Where would you draw the line?
Where I would draw the line is arbitrarily at some point within, I would say 6 months is probably reasonable to claim standing on that basis. But beyond that, you get into the generalized injury that if there is any injury, it belongs to the people as a whole, which this court has always said does not constitute a special injury sufficient to confer standing.
So you do believe that a petition signer and a voter has standing not just to make sure the election comes off, but to make sure that the results of that election are implemented for some short period of time.
Perhaps for some short period of time, but if the court brings that out too far, then what you have is standing of every voter in Texas who may have ever voted in a petition, an initiative, a referendum election, and I don't think the court wishes to expand it that greatly or should.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court. Mr. Alan Parker will present argument for the respondents. Respondents have 20 minutes.
May it please the court. My name is Alan Parker. I'm the CEO and founder of the Texas Justice Foundation. I represent two clients in this case. I have the honor of representing Councilman Rob Todd and citizen activist Richard Hotze, who was one of the leaders in an event that the city has paid inadequate attention to throughout this case, which was an election by the citizens of Houston in which 200,000 people rejected sexual orientation as a protected status when they had the opportunity in a referendum election to focus on that.
Ms. Hatfield said that 14 months is too long, that Mr. Holtze should have brought this action some months ago. How do you respond to that?
Your Honor, I respond, once the people have spoken, then the final political authority has given the word in this country.
It's been 50 years.
I think it should be 50 years. We have statutes on the books that are 150 years old in Texas. Once the legislature passes a law, until it's changed, it stays in effect.
That's a positive enactment, not a rejection. It's not a negative.
But the city council, the city charter provisions of Texas have of Houston have very easy provisions for someone to bring that issue again to the people through the initiative and referendum process.
Why didn't they do it this time then?
Because the people have already spoken, Your Honor. The honorable thing to do is to give effect to the will of the people until someone changes that will. Well, we don't simply say it's 5 months after the election, maybe the people have changed their mind. Those who hold that view should go to the public, do a petition signature like Mr. Hotze
well,
did.
But you're talking about the people in their capacity as a initiative legislature, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, that's how they get to do this.
That's right.
But there's law over on the other side that each legislature is different and not bound by the one before it and could change their minds.
Well, that's a different law for a city government than a state legislature, Your Honor, because in 1913 the citizens of Houston added initiative and referendum provisions to the city charter.
But my point is they're acting in the same capacity as the legislature acts. Is that not true?
In conceptual theory, but as a practical matter, since they don't meet regularly like a legislature, in a
but
sense,
they have the opportunity.
They have the opportunity to do
meet
so.
And do these every 2 years if they wanted to, if they didn't like something, isn't that right?
Your Honor, the day after the election, if other citizens didn't like the result, they could go through the initiative and petition process and put it on the ballot.
Back to why hasn't somebody done that this time instead of taking the route that they took?
Because there's no obligation. Your Honor, that issue was made by the city of De Leon. In the city of De Leon, one of the cases where you, or actually it was a court of appeals decision that rejected that argument, that citizens had to throw out the mayor in the next election, as Justice Heck suggested or something. Citizens don't have to go through the political process once there's been an election. They have the right to expect that the executive, whose job is to faithfully execute the will of the people, will follow the will of the people.
Taking that into account, then, what kind of injury has Mr. Hotze experienced that is particular to him and distinguishable from the rest of the public?
If I may put up my first exhibit on that point, Your Honor, this is Exhibit 1. This is a quote from Bloom decision, which was a unanimous decision by the Supreme Court of Texas just last year in June. And basically, the city of Houston made the same argument. You don't have any.
Well,
Mr. Bloom has
no. But this was in connection with an election to be held or the form of the election. We're now at a different point in time in the process. So under these facts, what particularized injury does Mr. Hotze have that is distinguishable from the rest of the public?
Mr. Hotze was a signature signer. He was a circulator, he was a leader, and he was a voter in that issue.
And he did get his referendum to the public, and it was voted upon, and that has all been completed. And now he is a member of the public. That event is done. He's not complaining about that event because it has occurred.
But he is complaining that the entire results of the election have been nullified by the executive branch.
Why doesn't every citizen of Houston have the same complaint then?
because some of the people voted the way the mayor is acting. So there's a difference between winners and losers in an election.
Why doesn't he have the same injury then as all the winners, so that again his injury is not distinct?
He probably does have the same injury as all the winners. This is like a voting rights case. I think any, we would argue that
as
any voter,
standing, you have to prove up that you voted in the election and that you voted for the referendum to vote down the order.
Yes, that's stipulated
so
by the city.
Only people who voted for it would have.
Yes, according to ours, it could be limited on the facts to he was an initiative signer and a declarer. In my opinion, in
but
Bloom,
if I could, just, I just want to.
But I would argue for citizen to answer that question.
Right. So the answer is because he voted in the election
and he was a winner,
was a winner. That's what you say gives him standing.
Yes. Okay. Because in Bloom, you said they have the right, a justiciable interest in valid execution of the election. If you can have the election, but it can be ignored by the executive, what's the point of having the election? That was the question one of the justices asked Houston.
Is there any case where a voter in Texas, regardless of how they swear they voted or how active they were in getting that vote, where they've had where they have been allowed by a court to bring an action for the enforcement of the popular will once the election process was completed?
I'm not aware of any other case where a mayor has put aside the results of an election, as happened in this case, Your Honor.
But this is a brand new.
It's one step farther than Bloom. And it would be asked the question, if in Bloom you said, well, Bloom, you went farther than just a right to an election. In Bloom, you said you had a right to a fair election, because the question was the ballot language improper or misleading? And so it wasn't just a right to an election, it was a right to a fair election. This case is the right to the results of the election, that the executive will follow the will of the people. And if the day after the election, the mayor had said, I don't care what the results are, by executive order, I am going to make sexual orientation a protected status, then clearly, I think the city has conceded. Hotze would have standing. It's the same issue 13 years later.
You talk about setting aside the election. Are there practical differences between an ordinance and an executive order?
Yes, under the charter of the city, there's no way to appeal by referendum an executive order of the mayor. And logically, there is a way to appeal from a legislative ordinance of the city, because the city has legislative authority. One reason that we have appeal
is the scope of the executive order as broad as it was under the ordinance, I guess is my question.
We believe that it is, yes, Your Honor, and the courts below agree. And the city has not really appealed that issue on the merits. They've appealed only on the standing, but I'd be happy to address it. We won below, and we think it's clearly the same issue. It's clearly the results of the election are being overturned. And, you know, this court isn't going to have a rule that says, well, standing says your interest in an election is pretty good for 3 months after an election, maybe 6 months. No. If you have an interest in preserving the validity of election because you worked in it, you voted in it, you were the winner, we don't want losers coming to court trying to set aside the results of the election.
Well, you admit, I mean, none of these past cases have set up a test that you had to sign the petition or be the person who thought of it. And as far as voting, that's been a secret ballot in Texas for a while.
Well, that's true, but when you're as active as someone like Mr. Hotze is, there's no secret where you stand on the issue.
But you would be for us erecting some type of test of activity, and what would that?
In this case, voting, Your Honor. This is like Baker versus Carr.
But once you vote, I mean, if you voted, you can say you voted however you voted, and as long as in your precinct people voted each way, that really can't be contested.
Well, I don't think anyone would bring a suit to enforce the results of an election unless they had voted that way.
So voting one way or the other is really not a useful way of winnowing down
the
possible class.
The secrecy of the voting booth is for the protection of the voter. If they want to stand up and say, I'm proud to say I voted against this ordinance and the mayor is ignoring it, the results of the election, and I as a citizen want to go enforce this referendum we had.
And since the secrecy of the ballot is in our rules of evidence, you think we could make declaring how you voted a requisite for standing?
Well, I think that's the burden on the plaintiff to allege their standing, Your Honor, as we have in this case. And in every case,
But we are largely making all this up, one way or the other. There's no case, well, there's no case in point either way in Texas law.
That's true. In that exact sense, yes, Your Honor, it's a case of one further step from Bloom. In Bloom, no one had voted in the election yet because the election hadn't been held. But you clearly said people have the right to have an election. Why is that? Because that's how we decide these issues in a democracy. What is the role of the executive? To faithfully execute the will of the people.
But are you saying that the city of Houston is now forever precluded from doing anything in its local government with respect to this issue? The city council cannot pass an ordinance, the mayor cannot pass an executive order, because a referendum defeated something, not did something positive, as Justice Owen was saying. Are you saying that now, forever, the city is precluded from ever addressing this issue?
The city is not precluded from it, Your Honor, but the mayor is not the person that has that authority.
Can the city council pass an ordinance contrary to the results of that referendum election?
Your Honor, our position would be that they could not, that it would be up to the citizens to initiate a petition to change that.
What about after all the voters are deceased?
Well, it's kind of a perpetual right, Your Honor. If you live here, you get to vote, and you're over 18.
So once you've had a successful referendum on an issue, that's it. That's the way Houston's going to live from now till forever.
No,
and
we take another referendum.
Until the citizens of Houston decide to change that, which is their right, their privilege, and the proper way.
Shouldn't the charter govern that issue?
It does, Your Honor. And it says that the people shall do that by initiative.
It does not say that it's a perpetual.
No, absolutely not. It just prescribes the manner in which it's changed again, which is by initiative of the people. The court talked a little about who the final authority.
What provision of the charter are you looking to that a referendum that defeats that something as opposed to has enacted something? I mean, you're dealing with a negative here. I mean, what provision of the charter are you looking to for this authority that it would take another popular vote in order to reverse that referendum?
It says basically, Your Honor, that if the city passes an ordinance or something like that, that by initiative and referendum, that it cannot be changed again without.
But you didn't pass an ordinance. You defeated something here. That's my point. Is I thought the charter read that if an ordinance had been passed, it could be repealed by referendum. You don't have an ordinance here that you're trying that is being repealed. You have the exact opposite. You have a negative.
That's true, Your Honor.
So
but
what provision of the charter are you saying prohibits the government from being able to act in the manner in which either the mayor has or if the city council chose to pass an ordinance?
It's Section 9, which is what you're referring to, and the rule of liberal construction of initiative and referendum. Because this court, ever since 1937, has said we must liberally construe initiative and referendum provisions. It is a limited government provision.
But doesn't it require a popular vote to be held to repeal or amend a resolution or an ordinance that is enacted, a positive enactment? So that provision's not applicable.
It's not directly applicable,
okay.
But I think with
so
the rule of liberal,
there's no other provision you're looking to.
No.
And if that's the case, then, if as opposed to an executive order by the mayor, the city council had enacted an ordinance similar to the executive order, would Mr. Hotze have standing to come in and complain about that ordinance at this point in time? Would we have the same controversy before us?
If Mr. Hotze simply lost a vote in the city council, I don't think he would have standing at this point, Your Honor.
Well, then why, if that's the case, is this not a political controversy at this point in time that would require some action by the city council as opposed to coming to the courthouse?
Well, Your Honor, the mayor has absolutely no power under the charter, and under the city council, and the record will reflect, Mr. Todd cannot get this on the city council's agenda without the mayor's concurrence. That's on pages 43.
Has there been any effort to do that?
Your Honor,
the record reflect that?
The record reflects that the city, on page 46, 47, and page 66 says that the city councilman does not have authority to put it on the agenda unless the mayor wants it.
Right, I'm really trying to take you back to one of Ms. Hatfield's points. And her point is that you're here too soon. That, in fact, there really is a forum for this. And, in fact, the way the local government operates, until such time as the city council acts or fails to act in some way, that we have a political controversy and you are here prematurely asking the courts to intervene. Would you respond to that argument?
Yes, that ignores the election. And City Councilman Todd feels that his duty as a city councilman is to give effect to the election of the people that occurred in 1985. He does not feel that he has any power, authority, or responsibility to ask for another vote of the city council when the people have spoken.
Well, I understand that he may feel that way, but would you respond to her argument when she says that the controversy is not right for that reason?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that you would then be completely gutting your responsibility as a court, which you have expressed, for example, in Glass. As a corollary to the rule of non-judicial interference with elections, the courts are duty-bound to prevent all interference with the political power of the people. You're forcing the people, after they've had an election and expressed their will, to go back and do it again just because the executive branch is ignoring their will. And once the people have spoken, then a citizen or a city councilman, and in the record, this city councilman has no power to place it on the agenda, Your Honor. You're asking him to do
that.
Can
I just ask you that question? I don't think we got an answer. Has he tried to put it on the agenda?
He has not tried to put it on the record in terms of having an actual vote.
So we don't know if the mayor would let him put it on the agenda or not?
No, we do not. We know that the mayor in this case on the record has said that that is totally discretionary with the mayor. We know that the mayor has ignored the votes of 200,000 people in the city. And we know that, but we do not, you know, we don't speculate. We do know the mayor has already passed the executive order and that the mayor did not seek executive
authority.
There's
been no attempt to override that at the council.
None whatsoever, Your Honor.
Texas has always been particularly strict about requiring an actual case in controversy. We've read it into our Constitution. We interpret declaratory judgments more strictly than most, if not all, other jurisdictions. Why shouldn't we wait till somebody in the public has actually been harmed by the, or has claimed the harm from the executive order, rather than letting politicians fight it out in a theoretical battle and ask the court to make a judgment call?
Well, Mr. Hotze fits that category. He's a member of the general public who's been harmed by this
act. Why, if particularly if you believe in the limited powers of a judiciary, should we be interfering essentially at this stage before somebody comes in and says, I've been harmed by this government act, me personally?
Well, keep in mind the city is arguing that not only Mr. Todd, but no member of the public can sue the mayor also. And we do. Well, I'm not conceding Mr. Todd's standing by any means. I'll address that.
But Mr. Hotze has not alleged that he's tried to get some employment that's been, or somebody else got a job that he would have gotten had the executive order not been in place.
He has the same injury to his right to vote and to see that his vote is carried out that was present by Mr. Bloom.
But we've never allowed voter standing in Texas. You're a voter, and therefore you can complain about constitutionality.
Well, the only reason for that in the prior case is there had been no election yet, Your Honor. Those people were suing to see that the election was held.
But are you saying that as a voter, that gives me the right to complain of any city ordinance that I'm affected by or any act of legislation? And don't we have to overrule a lot of cases if we do?
No, Your Honor. There hasn't been any denial of voter standing in that. Any person injured by an unconstitutional ordinance can sue to do it.
But having been a voter... If it's bothering to register a vote, does that make me injured?
Well, this is limited to initiative and referendum cases, Your Honor, because
But that's not Mr. Todd is in is in this situation. He's not a person who didn't get. I mean, he expressly his job is not affected by this. It's only job in city government, I guess, that's not. And why if your general approach is that the judiciary should not be poking its nose, as it were, into every governmental decision. Why should we decide this case before there's someone out there who claims an economic injury, that what's happening in their life is different because of this government action?
Your Honor, an independent judiciary is essential to the separation of powers doctrine. In the city of Pittsburgh case, for example, when they let the city councilman sue the mayor, they specifically said, if we want to have the legislative branch acting as a check on the executive branch, then we as the judiciary must be able to come in and referee the dispute. Because if you simply say the mayor can do whatever he wants, legislative council standing we're not going to allow, then there is no referee, there is no limited government enforcer, which is what the judiciary should be.
Do you think we should look to federal cases and other state cases that deal with the legislature and the governor? Or should we treat municipalities where both branches are a creation of the legislature differently?
Exactly, Your Honor. I would say that the municipalities are not entitled to deference. We're talking about people like the mayor of Dimebox and the city council, and some of them don't have much experience. I think this is not as high a level of branch, and by its very nature, we have initiative and referendum limiting municipal government, which we don't have on our state legislature, and certainly we don't have at the federal level. I would say this is a unique state issue, though I think it's also consistent with the federal cases like Coleman that did grant legislative standing to a state legislator.
With the buzzer,
I'm sorry,
I don't want to get into how much viability Coleman has.
Let me ask you if you would, Mr. Todd, if the council had taken up this issue and voted down an ordinance, and the mayor had issued the order, there had not been a referendum, would Mr. Todd have standing to challenge the mayor's action?
No, I don't think he would.
Why not? What? You think the initiative is what makes all the difference?
Yes, I think the initiative is what makes all the difference in this case. I think if there had been
that doesn't help Dimebox. They don't have initiative and referendum.
Well, I'm not sure there is a municipal code.
I'm assuming.
Provision.
I don't know.
It's in the municipal code, so I assume it's fairly statewide, Your Honor, that we have initiative and referendum at the local level. And so you're right. If the mayor had done the proper thing as mayor to perhaps bring this to the council, and he was simply a losing member, I think that's what Raines indicates. If you're losing your vote because other members of your own branch of government don't agree with you, don't come to the judiciary. But in this case, he is ignoring the will of the people who spoke in this election. If Todd has no standing, and the citizen, Hotze, has no standing, who was active, then there is no check and balance on the power of the executive branch.
You don't really care if it's either Todd or Hotze or both that have standing.
In terms of protection of the public, Your Honor, it would be, I think any citizen ought to have the standing that's been on the winning side of the election to preserve an initiative and referendum election. It could certainly be limited to the initiators of it also, and that would give broad protection to the public.
Let me ask you, I wasn't clear on your answer to the activism aspect of Mr. Hotze. Do I understand your argument is that his injury is different than any other of the 200,000 people that voted for that initiative in 1985 is because he's an activist? And so everybody knows where he stood.
Factually, that's true.
So that's the only thing that makes him different than any of the other ones in this case.
He was a signer of the petition.
No, is that correct?
That is factually.
Is that the standard that you want us to apply here?
No, Your Honor, I'm saying that's factually true, but I don't think legally that's the difference that should make an impact.
Well, what else is there then for a criteria to say that Mr. Hotze is entitled to sue?
Any citizen who is on the winning side of the election should have the right to prevent their vote from being diluted, just like any citizen in a gerrymandered district can sue. Even though their vote is just as diluted as everybody else's vote, even though they suffer no injury different from the general public.
But that's not our jurisprudence.
Well, you indicated in TAB that you wanted to follow federal jurisprudence, Baker versus Carr. And in that case, it was even more difficult to fashion a judicial remedy. You know, but here we're just asking the courts to construe a document, the kind you construe all the time. It's a city charter.
Well, but you've already answered Justice Hankinson that what you're arguing doesn't fit under the only thing that you're arguing.
No, that's we have standing to enforce the election, whether somebody else wants to change it or not. That's a different issue. That's a hypothetical question. In this case, we're suing to enforce the election that actually occurred on January 1985. That's why we have standing. That's, you know, on the merits, Your Honor, maybe the city, you know, the Court of Appeals felt that the mayor did not have this power. Maybe on appeal, you know, that might be a different argument, where he actually has the power. But clearly, we're the ones injured if he did not have the power to set aside the results of that election, which we don't think he did. This is a country, and Your Honor, to go to judicial activism, this is a country which is a rule of limited government, not executive fiat. And if the judiciary is not willing to enforce all of the limitations on the power of government, government will constantly expand. Those in authority always think that they know what's best. They wouldn't be there if they didn't do that.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Can you address the argument raised in the respondent's briefs that this court does not have jurisdiction over the Todd question?
Oh, yes.
Because that was merely an interlocutory order, which there was a statutory right for an appeal to the Court of Appeals, but there's only a conflict on the Hotze half of the case, so there's no conflict jurisdiction here, no other grounds for jurisdiction, and we shouldn't be paying any attention to it.
Yeah. I cited in my reply brief a decision of this court decided in the year 2000, in which this court took an interlocutory or took a look at whether the courts below had jurisdiction. And I think that inherent within this court's power, in every court's power, is to look to see whether they have jurisdiction over the subject matter.
I think what the Chief is asking you, there's no dispute, at least among the justices on the Court of Appeals, that the court, they had jurisdiction over Todd. The only dispute is, did they have jurisdiction over Hotze? And I think what the Chief is asking you to get right to is, since no one is complaining about Todd, how do we have jurisdiction over that aspect of the appeal? Why is it that we aren't just limited to the subject matter of the dissent, which is Mr. Hotze's theory?
Because the court to adjudicate, to render any opinion that does not have a person withstanding below, is an advisory opinion prohibited by the open
we
court.
We could render an opinion with respect to Mr. Hotze, clearly. How do we have jurisdiction to render an opinion with regard to Mr. Todd when there's no dispute, at least among the courts, the justices on the Court of Appeals, that they have jurisdiction over Mr. Todd?
Well, whether the Court of Appeals agreed or not, that there is jurisdiction over the Court of, jurisdiction over Todd, the city has asserted from the beginning, and it cannot waive, its right to challenge standing of Mr. Todd.
Well, this is a simpler question. This is purely our jurisdiction, and that this was an interlocutory order on as to Todd. There's still supposed to be a trial someday as
right.
to that. And prior to 1995, it would have been very hard to get that case reviewed, but now it can be reviewed by the Court of Appeals, but only by the Court of Appeals on an interlocutory appeal. And it can't come to us because there's no final judgment unless there's some other basis for jurisdiction, which has to be a conflict in courts of appeals, which nobody's alleging, or a dissent. And that's the basis for the jurisdiction you've alleged, is that there's this dissent in the Court of Appeals by Justice Amedei. But that dissent only went to the Hotze half of the case.
That's correct.
Now, if Hotze hadn't complained, if he'd just gone away, there probably wouldn't... We wouldn't have any right to hear the Todd case. The hook is there is this dissent, but I'm asking you, is that enough? Is the fact that there's a dissent on the other half of the case by a party who wasn't a necessary party, this could have been two separate lawsuits, is that enough to get us jurisdiction? And this is probably an open question, but I'm interested in your best argument.
It sounds like the court's going to adjudicate that question. I would take the position that that this court always has jurisdiction to determine whether it or the courts below had appropriate subject matter jurisdiction.
A lot of the legislative limitations are worthless. Okay.
Well, I would disagree. I think you do have that power inherently.
Why doesn't initiative make this different? Why doesn't the initiative referendum part of this make the standing issue easier? Because the argument of respondent is the courts should give effect to the political will of the people.
Well, I'm not sure that I've quite followed your question, but in this case...
The people don't want the order, the mayor does, and the court should give effect to the will of the people.
The key here is that referendum was defeated, that defeated a proposed ordinance. HOTSE has a political remedy, just as does Todd. HOTSE can now petition by initiative an ordinance that would have the effect of contravening. Justice Todd can do so
if he did that. If he did that and the council repealed it, could he sue? If he passed an ordinance.
If he passed an ordinance.
And the council repealed it, could he sue?
I think you might have a right controversy there.
Any voter? Any citizen?
No, not any voter. Someone who voted in that initiative election.
So you think it makes a difference whether they vote for or vote against?
No, I'm with Chief Justice Phillips on this. My vote is secret, and my right to that ballot
is secret. Well, but my point is, you think that if they're voting for an ordinance that passes, passes.
If the referendum.
Then they might have standing if the council tries to set it aside. If the referendum is to prevent an ordinance, and the council conflicts with that or the mayor, you think they don't have standing?
Yes, the distinction is in the purpose, between the difference in purpose between a referendum and an initiative. An initiative enacts law. A referendum, in this case, defeated a law, and I do believe that is at the core of the lack of standing.
Once a law has been passed, why wouldn't they always want to do it? I don't know that I have these straight. Why wouldn't you always want an initiative and make it a positive statement of law?
Because it's harder. You need more petition signatures.
Okay.
So this was a referendum that set aside a city ordinance.
That's correct.
And so the city council refuses to set aside the ordinance. And who has standing to make a referendum defeats a city ordinance?
It could. Yeah. So in this case did in 1985.
And so who can sue to force the council to then set aside the ordinance?
Any voter in that initiative election that referendum, if it enacts a law, if it defeats a law, I do not believe it is.
So in this case, referendums that defeat ordinances, there is no standing to force the council to set aside the ordinance.
That would be my position.
And if you're wrong on that position, then you're wrong in this case.
No, because that's an entirely different hypothetical in that case. Because in this case,
is 14 years, I mean, what fact in this case makes that a different case?
In relation to the HOTSE standing.
There's a statute of limitations on the referendum.
It's the remoteness in time, yes. No. Further away you move from the referendum election, the more generalized the grievance becomes. The more the grievance with the injury, if any, occurs to the voters as a whole and not to any particular voter.
So the 21st Amendment, I guess, which repealed prohibition, has been so old now that states are, that the federal government is free to regulate the importation and sale of alcoholic beverages just because it's been a long time since they ratified that 21st Amendment.
I think that position is if
somebody could claim a
if there is a specific current act of a legislative body that attempts to override that, then you might have a right controversy. And until unless you do that, it's my position that there is no right controversy.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. This has been my first opportunity to argue for this court, and I am reminded at this point that any experience that does not kill you makes you stronger.
That concludes the argument in the first cause, and we're now going to take a brief recess, and the entire court, Justice Abbott, will return.
All right.